We can also notice a number of distinctive religious customs that mark some fairly sharp differences between East and West. I think it is from the 8th century that it's safe to talk about a Greek Orthodox tradition and a Roman Catholic tradition. Now, it's important to say that at this time, neither side really yet admitted that the other existed. Each thought that it was wholly and uniquely correct about everything. Moreover, a complete rupture between the Eastern and Western branches of the Catholic Church had not yet happened. That'll come in the 11th century, and we'll meet it in a later lecture. And it's important to say that no one wished a rupture. But once again, we can look back and see how things were evolving differently. For example, in the Byzantine Church, priests could marry, whereas generally speaking, in the Latin Church, they could not. Bishops were not married in the Eastern Church, but priests could be married. The Byzantine Church used leavened bread, the Latin Church unleavened bread in the Eucharist, in the communion service. Byzantine monks were tonsured differently than those in the West. In the West, a bit of hair was cut off the top of a monk's head, signifying that he had abandoned some of his power, that he had abandoned some of his maleness. You may remember in the Old Testament certain rather interesting moments when someone has his hair cut and thereby is disempowered. In the East, the hair was shaved off the front of a monk's head. In the East, icons, beautiful religious pictures. Though there was a harsh, and yet in the end short-lived controversy over them in the 8th century, leading into the early 9th century, icons, beautiful religious pictures, came to play a very critical role in worship in the East. Icons were thought to be not only pictures of holy people, but indeed holy in themselves. They were somehow imagined to possess something of the power, the aura of the holy person whom they represented. Now, the Western Church had religious art, beautiful religious art, but not art that was itself holy. So, as I say, I think we can now talk about a Byzantine Empire as a way of thinking about this new world. Byzantine because, remember, Constantinople was the old Greek city of Byzantium, hence our name. But it's also important to say that's our name for it. They called themselves Romans. Fast forward one final time, and very briefly. In 867, with Basil I, the Byzantines got a new dynasty of rulers. We call these the Macedonians. They tended to be enormously capable soldiers. They secured the northern Balkans. For a time, they even rolled back the Muslim advance in Anatolia. They practiced very clever missionary and diplomatic policies that won Eastern Europe and even incipient Russia for orthodoxy, for their particular version of Christianity. They promoted learning, they promoted scholars, they were great builders. This was a brilliant cultural period for the Byzantine tradition. So we see that this realm that was threatened on many sides, that had to make a series of prudent adjustments to its own history, eventually ushered in a new empire that we can call Byzantine, one that was, in many respects, fully and fundamentally the heir of the ancient Roman Empire. But let's notice a remarkable and ironic parallel with the Islamic world. We have, again, a universal faith in Christianity, a new chosen people, the subjects of the Basileus, once again a foundational holy book, the Bible, and once again an orientation towards classical culture and, to be sure, towards classical Greek culture. How very similar, in other words, are the Byzantine and Islamic worlds. What the West was like in this time is the subject of our next lecture.